You're listening to Spellbound.
Hello again. Welcome. It's episode 43 of Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith, and we've got a great episode of Two Damn White Guys for you today. Going to be joined by Mr. Andrew Rader. We're talking about free will. Does it exist? Quantum mechanics says no. Pretty interesting stuff. We're going to take a look at some studies that suggests free will does not exist and kind of compare that against human psychology, the decision-making process in general, and just talk about it. Figure it out. We're going to figure out what to make of free will. Today's episode is brought to you by RX Bar, the whole food protein bar that's out to prove that real food ingredients actually taste really good. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you're probably already familiar, but we're big fans of RX Bar here. I'm joined today by Andrew Rader. The fax machine is back in the house, as always.
I'm back.
Does free will exist? What do you think, Andrew?
Did we choose to talk about this subject, or do we have a choice at all?
Yeah, it's funny. You texted me this week and you said you wanted to talk about free will. And I was like, how are we going to make 30 minutes out of talking about free will? But here we are talking about it. It's like we didn't even have a choice.
I don't really think free will exists. I'm kind of skeptical, I have to admit.
It's funny. I've been thinking about this all week, ever since you mentioned us talking about it this week. I've just been like kind of getting my head around it. And it's crazy how science is now kind of weighing in on philosophy, because like for the longest time, science just pertained to weather and, you know, just everyday nature.
Science was just about weather.
Early science. Yeah, it was like a way to tell us about the things of nature that we'd always experienced, but never knew anything about.
Astronomy.
It started really rudimentary. And now it's gotten so complex that science is now questioning the very thing that most of our religions question, which is everything predestined? Are we all just a product of the Big Bang? Are we all just fireworks shooting off this big explosion that happened billions of years ago?
Mm-hmm. Well, many of these are quests for knowledge. That's philosophy. Religion, to some extent, also has quests for knowledge. And science is kind of the ultimate quest for knowledge, where we actually ask questions about the world and look for ways we can measure them. So it's kind of the ultimate quest for knowledge.
I'm going to say that we do have free will, but not as much as we think we do.
Well, I mean, I kind of think that we don't have free will per se, but it's as if we do, or we must act as if we do, and you would never know the difference. Because it's the initial conditions of the universe are set up in such a way that everything follows from that, and eventually, it's like the butterfly effect, right? You have like butterfly flapping their wings in China and it creates a tornado in the United States, right? You can't really trace or measure the connectiveness, but they are connected and everything is connected to everything that came before. So everything that happens is just a matter of what happened before going back to the beginning of the universe.
So basically, all of this stuff that we're talking about is kind of a byproduct of us being byproducts of the Big Bang. So basically, if all the possibilities of this timeline were encapsulated in this, you know, explosion, however many billions of years ago it was,
13.7.
There you have it. Then, if that's the case, then it shouldn't really be that surprising that there is no free will, or at least not as much free will as we think there is.
Yeah, it's a little bit unclear because quantum mechanics also has randomness. Quantum mechanics is based on probabilities and the inability to actually measure. So I actually believe even if free will does not exist, we could never measure an event completely before it happens, because quantum mechanics uncertainty principle, Heisenberg uncertainty principle, says that to measure something actually changes it. Like if you're trying to measure the state of an electron, right?
But so, that doesn't apply to predicting the future, right?
Right, exactly. You could never use the lack of free will, if that is the case, to predict the future, which is kind of then at that point tantamount to free will. Like it's almost the same as having free will, because you can never know what choice you're going to make in advance. So does it matter if the choice was actually predestined if you could never tell that it was predestined?
I've been thinking about free will all week because of the conversation we had earlier. And this week I was driving my car down the street and I was thinking, what keeps me from just driving this car off the road?
Yeah.
And then I was like really thinking about it while I was driving. Yeah. And I was like, maybe nothing. But then I thought in the free will argument, you could say there is no free will and I was not supposed to drive my car off the road at that moment. But you could also say I have a reptilian mind, which is obsessed with survival, and it would never let me do that.
And a mammalian mind that would not want to hurt people around you.
That too. I mean, I wasn't implying I would hurt somebody else. I was just saying,
but
what
I mean,
would keep
like,
me
hurt the people who love you, like just from you being hurt?
Well, I'm not even talking about, like, killing myself or something like that. I'm just saying, like, what's to keep me from driving my car into a ditch? Like, it would be a major inconvenience at very least. I would have to call some friends to help me get it out. You know, like, it's not worth my time to drive my car into a ditch, so that's why I don't do it.
Nothing. Yeah.
You know, I wasn't implying I would drive my car off the road to hurt myself or that I would, you know, end up dying or something, but just like, what keeps us from doing anything in any given moment, you know?
I had a major case of deja vu today, actually. I don't generally have that too much, but I have before a few times where I was almost certain that I'd done something that had happened before and I knew what was going to happen. I mean, obviously, deja vu, I think, is just something in your brain.
Yeah, there's studies on this.
Like a misfire or a connection, a false connection that your brain makes. You think there's a connection, but there really isn't. Something like that.
Yeah, they can reproduce deja vu in with probes and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, they do a lot of experiments on free will.
Oh, really? Like what?
To some extent, free will is verifiably not existing. They've done a lot of experiments on subjects who are asked to make choices, and the experimenters can tell what the patient's going to choose before they choose it.
How?
Because there's a certain part of the brain and the subconscious that will fire to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even aware of it. You're not aware of what choice you're going to make. But the choice has already been made by part of your brain. This part of your brain makes some kind of choice. You're not aware of it, but the researchers can measure it with an MRI. And then 5 to 10 seconds later, it's sometimes a long time, like 5 to 10 seconds, you will make a choice and they knew what choice you were going to make.
And how are they predicting this?
It's predicting it by looking at what parts of your brain are firing ahead of time.
Oh, so we see responses in the brain that indicate what decision they're going to make.
It's exactly.
Almost like they're seeing the chemical release maybe before it actually gets processed or something.
Exactly. So by measuring your brain, researchers can tell what decisions you're going to make before you make them, before you're aware of the decisions.
How do we know that the moment that your brain releases those chemicals, maybe there's a period of time that elapses before you actually receive that information and digest it into a decision. You know, maybe what we're witnessing in experiments is like just the chemical release, and maybe it's not instantaneously turned into a decision or something like that.
Well, it is, but the chemical release is always associated with a decision. So the chemical releases in your brain, you know, determine what decision you're going to make. So that is the decision. Whatever chemicals or sections of your brain get activated, that is the decision, and you cannot change it.
So then the subject already made the decision, and the researchers are getting a reading on the computer before the subject is even aware they've made the decision.
Or consciously aware. Yeah. So, I mean, it's questionable whether that means there's no free will, because obviously your decision is already set and you can't change it, but you could argue that that brain firing, that subconscious brain firing, is the free will, right? Like your brain had free will to make one decision or another, but you can't consciously make it as you thought you were making it. So you can't sort of change that decision midstream. You've already made your decision. You're just not aware that you've made your decision. Most decisions, it seems like you make before you're aware that you make them, but that doesn't necessarily mean a lack of free will.
How do we know that it's not before we've admitted that we've made the decision? Like maybe maybe they've made the decision in their head, but they haven't verbally like communicated.
They're not. The patients aren't conscious of the decision either. They're not aware that they've made a decision.
How do we know that?
Because, well, I guess they say they're not aware that they have made the decision, and it's repeatable with lots of subjects. So it's unlikely that they're all lying, for example.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. So people actually spent money doing studies on this.
Oh, yeah, lots of studies. But people do studies on a lot of things. Have you ever heard of the Ig Nobel Awards?
No.
It's like rewards for doing the most useless research ever. There's like awards for beavers swimming through maple syrup.
That's so good.
Yeah, like the most useless research, yeah.
That sounds like torture.
You mean the beavers?
This is a moral issue. This falls into last week's episode.
So, I mean, the other thing is, even the quantum mechanics argument for or against free will, the fact that there's randomness that can't be measured, and it's unclear whether that's free will or not, like whether it's randomness that we just can't measure, but it already existed in some sense, or if it really is random, truly random. Randomness is a very difficult thing. It's like, nothing we decide is ever random. We kind of fool ourselves into thinking it is, but nothing, you know, that we decide is random. But even so, then if it's a randomness that comes from quantum mechanics, like at some subcellular level in our brain, there's some like random dice roller in our brain, then it's not within our control anyway. So is that free will? So there's some like random quantum mechanic process in our brain that's telling us what to do.
So you're saying it's either that everything's predestined and every action that we're experiencing was like perfectly, like it's just happening as it should, like fireworks explode in different ways.
Right.
Have, you know, or there is some kind of quantum random generator in our head that is truly random and is like, it's not predestined at all, but it's also still not free will.
Right. That's kind of what I think. Like, your brain is you. So what is you making a decision really mean? So I think that there's some neurons that do have like a bit of randomness in them that help you break deadlock. And this is why like people say go with your gut, because your gut actually does have neurons. I think your gut has like more neurons than a cat's brain or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tons of bacteria and stuff too.
Well, yeah, but your bacteria can't. There's like 10 times as many bacteria cells in your body as human cells, but they can't really make decisions for you.
Right, yeah, not...
Except to eat lots of yogurt.
Of course.
Send more yogurt. but there are neurons that kind of help break the deadlock by having some randomness in them.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean?
But is that free will? If it's like, what does free will mean? Are we talking at the level of the brain? I mean, your brain is you, right? So if your brain has some randomness, is that really you making a decision?
Well, to me, free will is a bigger concept than just what's going on in our heads. It's like all of nature and everything that's ever been or will be, you know, including the first gases that formed after the Big Bang and, you know, all the random crap that happened for hundreds of thousands of years while we were waiting on anything to really show up. All of that would be predestined too.
Yeah.
When you compare everything that's ever been to this free will thing, like, why would everything have evolved like it has, you know, in such a random way? It doesn't really seem like, it just seems like life trying to adapt and survive is what it seems like.
It's tough because in kind of mathematics, everything that exists comes from like the initial condition, something that came before, right? So how would any, you know, true randomness actually come about? The only way that I can think of is like quantum mechanics, where you have some actual true random number generator, something beyond the universe that we can't really see. Even that might not be random, but it's just kind of misunderstood. We don't really understand how it comes about yet.
Right.
Like it's almost like impossible for just things to happen for no reason. They always have a reason, even if the reason is inscrutable. Like we can't really tell what the reason is. It's like based on... like a chaos theory. Chaos theory is like the butterfly effect. It's, you know, everything's caused by small perturbations here or there, and they get amplified to the point where we can't really tell where they came from, but that doesn't mean it came from nowhere. It just means that it's hard to trace it back to its origin.
I guess for me, the whole free will thing is kind of hung on this question of, it's almost like the predestination conversation. It's like, is everything predestined, you know? And the whole universe is so enigmatic. I don't think it's even any more helpful because the universe, it's seen so many different shapes and sizes and species and stuff. It's like, you can't really draw any predestination from that. It doesn't line up with any other predestination theory I've ever heard.
Yeah, but because the initial conditions are so inscrutable, it's hard to tell the causes of things. And therefore, we must act, and it's impossible to predict the future. Therefore, we must act as if there is free will. So I think, like, the whole argument about no free will means that people aren't responsible for their actions and those kinds of things really don't mesh with kind of human society.
Yeah, well, societies wouldn't even be possible if it weren't for people taking responsibility for their own actions and considering themselves moral creatures. I guess that's how we're able to coexist in a finite amount of space in the first place. So it kind of makes sense why this conversation can make some people a little uncomfortable. But we are going to put a pin right here to take a quick break. We'll come right back to it. We're going to take a break to talk about the people who made this episode possible. These people have made an amazing product that you can eat and feel good about. We're talking about RX Bar. The whole food protein bar with no artificial ingredients, fillers, preservatives, or just general BS. Who needs any of that stuff when you've got real food ingredients? I'm laughing even just saying it. I mean, like, when you think about the concept of eating preservatives and fillers that are in most of these protein bars to keep them from decomposing in the package, why would you eat that? Think about what you're putting in your mouth. With RX Bar, you know every ingredient serves a purpose that's gonna make your body feel great. It's gonna sustain you if you're hungry. Perfect for a breakfast on the go, a snack at the office to push you through your afternoon slump. I keep one in my bag just for a Hail Mary whenever I need it, as, you know, for a plane ride or if I'm stuck in the car in traffic. The possibilities are endless. It's perfect. I love having these things around. Transparency is huge for RX Bar. All of their ingredients are labeled prominently on the front of the package, not on the back, underneath a little flap that you have to peel up just to see what's inside of it. Everything's on the front, so you know when you're looking at it on the shelf exactly what you're about to eat. RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, and whether you prefer sweet, savory, chocolatey, or fruity, there is definitely an RX bar for you. What kind of protein bar has egg whites? An RX bar. That's what kind. Egg whites are an amazingly clean source of protein that's easy for your body to absorb. They do it in a way that's so tasteful, you'd never know there's eggs in it. It's like, how does eggs and dates go together with nuts and chocolate? It makes no sense, but it's delicious. It's just nonsensical. Just like free will. It's kind of the perfect episode to plug in RX Bar. And be sure to check out the all-new RX Nut Butter. It's very similar to the bar, only it's in nut butter form, so you can spread it on some bread or a cracker or just eat it right out of the pouch if you're feeling like a lunatic. It's got the egg whites, it's got fruit, it's got nuts, and every serving has 9 grams of high-quality protein. Gotta love those egg whites. They offer the flavors of peanut butter, honey cinnamon peanut butter, and vanilla almond butter. Mmm. They're gonna give you guys 25% off your first order. Just for listening, if you visit rxbar.com/spellbound, enter the promo code spellbound at checkout, you're going to get 25% off. I do need to note this deal is only valid in the U.S. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to our international listeners. Maybe you can move to the United States and order some RX bars for that 25% off. That was a joke, obviously. That URL again is rxbar.com/spellbound. Enter promo code spellbound at checkout for 25% off. Okay, so before the break, we were talking about free will and how people need to feel responsible for their own actions in order for society to work, because we all have to play our part, and in order to coexist, we need to know we can trust everyone around us to an extent. I tried to talk to somebody about this week. I actually talked to a few friends in preparation for this episode, just asking people what they think about free will, and on more than one occasion, I felt like the question made people uncomfortable.
Yeah, the decision-making thing in your brain is really interesting. Some people have called it the magic eight ball view of preferences. So basically, like, you shake the magic eight ball and it comes up with a different answer.
This is your quantum computer that exists in our mind?
Yeah. Quantum computer in your brain that kind of gives you different answers based on just randomness that are, like, inscrutable. You can't tell what it's going to come up with.
It's not that simple, right? Because we're getting fed impulses that are conflicting from our reptilian mind and our limbic system and our neocortex. So, mm-hmm. Yep. Like, you know, and those convince us of all to do and not do all kinds of things just because they're in our best interest.
Yep.
So it's not just that we're like little robots flipping a eight ball around in our head and, you know, coming up with answers.
Yeah, that's true. You definitely get like different signals. You definitely get, like, if you're deciding what to eat, you want to eat something healthy or something tasty. How do you make that decision? You probably get different signals from different parts of your brain and your reptilian brain saying, just eat it. Just eat it.
Right. Like, I want yeah, survive. Meat.
I want the sugar. I want the ice cream. Do reptiles like ice cream?
They better.
I'm not sure that they do, especially being cold-blooded.
Yeah, maybe they like hot chocolate.
Yeah. You know, part of your rational part of your brain saying, well, then I'll have to go to the gym and work it off, and I don't know that I want to do that, and it's not healthy, and I'm not going to live as long, and I might have a heart attack and all this kind of stuff, right? So
right.
It's like you're trying to balance these different impulses. But that's not necessarily the same thing. It's a decision, because at some point you have a decision to make. And I think we're talking about what the decision is rather than what the different impulses are. So you might have like different impulses while you're making the decision, but at some point you're going to have to tell the waiter what you're going to order.
Yeah, but the way I see it is that at any given moment I have 3 impulses. Mm-hmm. Survive or be empathetic, or I'm trying to communicate something in a very self-aware kind of way, you know, like, people skills or whatever you want to call it, or, you know, effective communication, whatever. But not any one of these impulses deserves our attention at all times. So the way I kind of see it is that our brain kind of weighs the pros and cons of each impulse in any given moment. And then we just go with our gut in that moment. And it's, you know, sometimes it's not the best decision. And sometimes more often than not, I think we do make the right decision.
Yeah. But are some people more likely to go with their gut? How do you choose between going with your gut and going with your kind of brain and overruling your gut? How do these decisions get made? It's unclear. And some part of your brain does it. Like we say, go with your gut. But that decision is actually made in your brain, obviously. It's just a figure of speech.
Yeah. Well, there's tons of connection between our gut and our brains.
Yeah, there's definitely influences. But ultimately, the decision comes to part of your brain. And there is a decision that's made. You may be weighing different perspectives, but you have to make a decision. And the decision is made in some part of your brain. And researchers can tell what the decision is that you're going to make before you make it. So,
yeah, but you can still have these impulses affecting those decisions, even if they're really quick. I think, you know, some decisions we have less than a second to respond to, like a car wreck or something like that. And then other decisions we have years to respond to, like if you're writing a book or something, you know, you have, you know, so I think it's all, I think any decision is made within the confines of that situation. And to go with your gut kind of implies you're going to just do whatever you like feel is right. But I still think you're weighing in that moment all the pros and cons of each of your three conflicting impulses. And I don't think it's that you're just like making a snap judgment. I still think there's probably some, you know, pro and con weighing in those moments.
Yeah, you at least think there's pro and con weighing, but ultimately you're going to like weight things differently and you're going to come down on some side. I mean, it's not like a completely rational because most decisions in life have incomplete information. Like if you don't have incomplete information, then the choice is obvious. Like some choices in life are just completely obvious. But many choices, you're trying to make decisions in a vacuum of information. You don't have enough information to completely know what's going to happen because it's based on probabilities. Like you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You're going to weigh different pieces of evidence that are incomplete and put your weight somewhere. And it's going to be somewhat random.
You're saying that sometimes we make decisions without, you know, with the limited information that we have at the time. We have to make a decision in the moment.
You have to break the deadlock.
Yeah, and it's not always the best decision because in that moment, we are literally just rolling the dice.
Right, pretty much, yep.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
The other thing is, even though we probably don't have free will per se, we probably do have free won't.
You said this earlier. What is this?
Yeah, meaning that even though researchers can tell what decision you can make, apparently you may have a veto power over it. So you can say, so your brain makes a decision and then you or really some other part of your brain, because you are your brain, says, nope, not going to do it.
So you're saying it's easier to say no to something than it is to commit to it.
Yeah, like your brain can make a decision and have an impulse. Like you could say, I'm going to order the chocolate cake, but then you could at the last minute decide, actually, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to overrule that decision.
I'd like to see a study on how many people actually use that willpower in that moment.
Yeah, actually, so it's another thing is it's something you can train. So you can train that impulse by repeatedly denying yourself things. That's like monks and stuff, ascetic monks.
Mm-hmm.
You can train yourself to be better at rejecting your brain's natural stimulus.
I believe this. Yeah, I think this is like exercise.
How you develop willpower. You can exercise your ability to say no to your brain.
Yeah, this is like dieting. This is exercise. It's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's anything that we do that's good for us that isn't great in the moment.
And some people who have damaged parts of their brain are unable to exercise this control. So some people, especially like criminals who, you know, have gone into violent rages and murdered people and stuff like that, often have problems in their brain. There was like a case of a guy who had a tumor in his brain, and he was like a normal, nice guy until he developed this tumor. And then he didn't know what was happening to him, and he just felt like different or strange. And he went up to like a clock tower and shot a bunch of people. And
wow.
They afterwards, I think he killed himself, but they afterwards scanned his brain. Oh, and he wrote a note saying, whoever like finds my body, do an autopsy and check out my brain because there's something wrong. I don't feel right. And they like checked his brain, and he had this big tumor that was pressing up against his brain that was preventing him from exercising control, basically.
Wow. Well, see, this is actually, again, it kind of gets back to what I was, the question I was saying earlier, like the bigger question this argument raises, not just about do individuals have free will, but what does free will say about the fact that this guy developed a freaking tumor that caused him to shoot a bunch of people and stuff like that? Like, if you're going to say that individuals don't have free will, then that must mean that there's some mechanism that caused this guy to get a tumor that he had no control over either.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, maybe there was. Like, maybe he kept his cell phone too close to his head.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what, yeah, there's that.
Too many carcinogens or something like that. But, or, you know, didn't eat enough broccoli. I mean, it's not going to be that specifically, but, you know.
Stay in school, kids. Eat your broccoli.
Eat your broccoli. But it's hard to say, right? Like, so cancer and tumors are caused by genetic mutations, which are basically random events. So, mm-hmm. you know, ultimately, cancer is kind of a random phenomenon that is caused by, I mean, we say random, but, you know, when we think of random, it can mean two different things. It can mean truly random, which I'm not sure even exists, even in quantum mechanics, because it means that the outcome can never be known. Actually, in quantum mechanics, that probably is random because you can never measure it. But, like, even random number generators on a computer, if you go and, like, type in random number generator, try to get, like, a dice roller on a computer or a game or something like that on your computer, it's not random.
Right. It's still got a seed number.
Right. It's got a seed and it uses the time and it just kind of generates a relatively unpredictable number.
The appearance of randomness.
Yeah, it's pseudo-random.
This is kind of Clark's third law that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So if you were to like audit the source code of these random number generators on the internet, you would be able to understand how, you would be able to predict perfectly what number it's going to give you
exactly.
next.
Yeah, you could recreate it and you could exactly predict what numbers would be generated every time. Whereas with quantum mechanics, the whole idea is that you cannot predict it.
In other words, the website who is giving you the random number knows what number you're going to get already.
Yes. Yep.
So there is no free will.
On a computer, at least. There's no randomness on a computer.
Yeah.
Because basically it is analogous because computers have switches, right? A computer is basically a brain. It's like a really primitive brain. It's just got a bunch of switches. Like neurons in a brain. And a computer is incapable of generating free will because it's just a whole bunch of switches. Like, you know what's going to happen. Like, it just does a bunch of calculations and comes up with an answer. So you give it one value, runs it through a bunch of calculations, and it comes up with another value. That number is completely predictable, which, because a brain is basically like a really advanced computer with a lot more connections, the brain should be coming up with something, a number that's predictable. Right? Like, give it a stimulus, give it a certain impulse, give it a question, and the brain should come up with the same response every time because it's just running through a series of calculations. It's like a really advanced computer.
I think this is why there's so, you know, in quantum theory, we need so many higher, spatial dimensions in order to account for all this kind of stuff, because how do you make sense of all this stuff unless there's something else, like a box that's running the software we're experiencing or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think that even if quantum mechanics is random, which it is basically based on the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, in other dimensions or, you know, kind of outside of our universe, if these forces and gravity and Higgs boson leak into other universes or beyond our universe, maybe in those dimensions, it's not really random. It just seems random because we only see part of it, which is basically what happens with a random number generator on a computer. You basically, like, using the clock to leak a really large value out of a complex calculation that overflows the storage capacity of the computer in terms of, like, a digit that can store in a float. It's like a type of character in the computer. So you're basically, like, overloading the computer in a way that is sort of, like, pseudo-unpredictable. That's what a random number generator computer is. And that could be what's happening in our universe. That could be what we see as randomness in our universe as the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yeah. So whether or not it's some, you know, spatial plane beyond our perception, or maybe it's just the butterfly effect and, you know, everything is a cause and effect of each other, and we're all just experiencing this together. I don't really know what the difference is between those two things, really. I mean, we're not in control of what happens either way, really, except for, you know, our small part and the decisions that we make as individuals day to day. So I think either way you look at it, it's probably fine.
Yeah, I think that's right. We don't have free will, probably, but we must act as if we do, right? Like, there's no sense going around just saying, well, this is predestined, because, you know, if you're going to be a dick and say that was predestined, then, like, okay, but you're just proving it then, right?
Like, yeah, you're basically saying, like, God made me a dick.
Right. But I think you can... Like, we must act as if there is free will, because, you know, to some extent, we can try to make sure that the determinism is as good as it possibly can be. So, if fate exists, then we want to make sure fate's the best it can possibly be.
Yeah, that.
Because we don't know what fate is going to tell us to do.
Yeah, well, also, I think a more digestible way to look at it is that we have a mammalian brain. We have the limbic system. We are incentivized by empathy because it's proven to be a powerful tool. And, you know, we should care about not just other people, but the entire planet, the environment and everything, as much as we care about what we're going to watch on Netflix tonight or what restaurant we're going to order food from on Uber Eats, because it's our best asset. And I think if we follow empathy, we find a basis for morality.
Yep. We must act as if free will exists and treat people the best we can.
I think free will is going to make us end this episode right now.
Do we have a choice?
I don't know, but it's been 30 minutes. So we're going to turn it over to the listeners. We want to know what you think about free will. You can shoot us a tweet. I'm at Julian Was Here on Twitter. I'm pretty slow on Twitter these days, so be patient with me. Andrew, however, is much more active on Twitter. You can tweet him at Mars Raider, MarsRader. We're so glad you joined us today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Probably the most helpful thing you can do if you want to help us out is rate us or review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe if you're enjoying the episodes. The episodes just show up on your phone when they get uploaded. It's pretty convenient. All of these things help us. However, if you feel like not helping us, you can just continue to listen without subscribing, rating, or reviewing, or engaging with our brands. We'll still have you with us. It's all right. I'm Julian Smith. This has been Spellbound. Thanks so much for listening. See you guys next Monday.